You are listening to Icons and Icons of Final Fantasy 14 Game Club Podcast. This is episode 74, covering the second quarter of the Alexander Raid series. We may have errantly said the first third last time. Don't worry about it. This is raids 4 through 6. I am your host, Chris Taylor. My pronouns are he, him, and with me is my esteemed co-host,
Ryan Beatty. My pronouns are they, them.
What happened last time?
It was the first quarter, baby. Sports. Last time we started getting to the bottom of what is the deal with that giant robot chilling at Idleshire. Surprising no one, it turned out to be the primal Alexander, who is so large it will bleed the region dry of ether in matter of days. This got us embroiled in a plot involving diving into Alexander, fighting some quote-unquote evil goblins named the Illuminati, led by Quick Things All Thoughts. During this, we started hanging out with a treasure hunter named Mide, who is seeking something called the Enigma Codex, as well as Round Rocks, a young, lovable goblin who collects junk. In case you were worried no one would be dressed like they're in Kingdom Hearts, Cid is also here, along with Biggs and Wedge. We left off ready to strike at Alexander's core, trying to halt the Illuminati's plot.
And we start this week with a quest called The Pulsing Heart. Mide thinks she has the knowledge required to shut down Alexander's core, but will need us to get her there. The latest Illuminati messages are so foul, Wedge won't repeat them and asks us to teach them some manners. Wedge is just, like, basically hate reading a toxic Discord's a real talk channel. Very good.
Yeah, no, I at first I was like, oh my god, Wedge is such a little prude baby. And then I was like, oh shit, no, I've been on Elon Musk's Twitter now. I know how bad it can get out there. All right, Wedge, forgiven.
Is the ex-girlfriend destroying Western civilization in the room with us now? When we enter the Burden of the Father, there's a boss there, and somehow, despite this being her fourth rodeo, Mide is shocked that it's there and runs away. This boss, also a nothing, mostly noteworthy for the one you spam unsynced like 40 times for the light farming portion of an animal weapon.
Oh, wow. That sounds horrific.
Whatever. We got it down to like 58 seconds plus like about a minute to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Did not take that long.
The only thing aesthetically that I wanted to bring out in this raid layer is that the heart, the core looks like a combination of like an old timey bomb that they have to dismantle and an actual physical.
We don't see it till heart. After, and I already have that.
Sorry.
In this fight, the only mechanics are two party members get sucked into a mini arena to fight a mob. You should hope it's you because it does the hilarious you get blown up into the air animation, but for like 15 seconds. And, there are some tethers that a tank should pick up to soak some heavy damage instead of a DPS, but also it's fine if you don't. They'll probably live. This is a Bismarck-style boss where the boss's main body that you need to kill is unavailable for a while, so you just hit it in the leg until it falls over, and then the boss is available, and then you hit the boss, and then you hit him in the other leg, and blah-de-blah-de-blah. Nothing. Literally nothing. The lasers are cool, though. There are cool lasers.
They're cool looking lasers. Wow, cool lasers. Boss battles are bad.
Don't say that. These are actually cool lasers that have cool sound effects and bounce around. They're not like really large lasers. They're like a laser blast in Star Wars or whatever.
They are cool lasers, and also the like thesis of Alexander is not Square saying themselves that the boss battles are bad. I know that I used the metaphor extremely wrong. The lasers are cool, and Final Fantasy XIV did not want these boss battles to be bad. And they're not bad. They're
good. The numbers are too low now because it is 2023, my friend.
It's 2024, my friend.
Whatever.
So, after the fight, the platform descends, and us, Mide, Biggs, and Wedge arrive at what looks like a World War II ocean mine. Mide climbs atop it, hits some buttons, and then dives off. The lights go out, it vents energy, and the clamshell opens up and the core ceases spinning. Then, QuickThinks shows up and saying that we're smarter than he thought, and then gets a Link Pearl call. I did just, like, a little bit of localization research, because I was trying to figure out what the goblins would have sounded like in Japanese, and it appears that Gabi speak is almost entirely like a U.S. or like English language localization invention. A lot of it we've talked about is either nothing or kind of annoying, but the line that QuickThink says here, greater are knowings and brain cases of unwise than QuickThinks believes. Then he goes, perhaps QuickThinks should study Uplanders. That line hit for me. I thought that was a cute little delivery of QuickThinks being like, oh shit, you're smarter than I thought. Anyway. Oh,
I have been loving all of the goblin stuff. I think it took them a while to get at it, like, through all of A Realm Reborn, and now that, like, having a pretty clearly defined style, like, it is very endearing, and I like it throughout this entire raid series.
Absolutely, yeah, I'm getting warmer and warmer on it the deeper into Alexander we go, which speaks to a confidence. You're totally right. Back to the scene, QuickThinks gets a Link Pearl call, and he says out loud, oh, something has been found, and he says the end of the goblin's wandering is nigh, then flies off deeper into the bowels of Alexander, which worries Wedge.
This makes Biggs wonder if QuickThinks' plan accounted for us shutting down the core. His bodyguards were also not there, along with his cat, which makes everyone worry about what's going on at Idleshire. And then when we get there, Red Bricks tells us that, in fact, the Illuminati did swarm Idleshire, but only took useless junk. Sadly, all the Gordian bolts are still in my inventory. they were last seen at the shortstop where Round Rocks is, so we head off while the dramatic trouble music plays. We arrive and everyone is unhurt, but Round Rocks is in tears. They took all her treasures. Sid rolls up and tells her to dry her tears, throwing an unconscious Illuminati goblin down. You can tell he's an Illuminati goblin because he's got like little crosshairs in his eyepiece.
Mm.
He found him near the edge of town, next to her, crates of her stuff, which Biggs is carrying. His animation is very sad, and he had to hold them for a long time while I typed these notes. Nothing is missing, so the Illuminati appears not to have found what they were after, and Round Rocks theorizes they were actually after her favorite treasure, the stone in use in Wedge's listening device.
I felt so bad for Round Rocks during this. In my notes, I went, oh my, all caps, why did no one stop them from stealing her shit? Why did they just let the Illuminati take her stuff? And then immediately afterwards, oh good, Biggs brought most of it back. Thanks, Biggs. This treasure is Round Rocks' favorite. She found it in a nearby castle as Alexander first appeared during its failed summoning. Round Rocks removes the stone from the device and holds it up, and a hologram appears. Mide is taken aback, and she calls it a fragment of the Codex. Mide gives Round Rocks a hard stare. Sid is feeling good about the W, but reminds us that the Illuminati are unlikely to throw in the towel and will be back for blood. Sid says, it's okay though, because we're here now, we will help keep them safe. Round Rocks calls us a friend and thanks us. Mide clarifies that we protected her home, something almost no one would do, but against a primal, no less.
Round Rocks says the same to Mide, who tells her, not many of us find machines so pretty and we gotta stick together. When asked, Mide says she didn't always love machines. It was an acquired interest from her love. Back then, she and her friends were lost in a dream, believing they could reassemble a broken world with logic, reason, and technology. Just fucking Lamal. Come on, dude.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing? These days, and she says, these days, the memories feel so far away. They feel like dreams rather than lived experiences. Then she's like, all right, cutscene's over. Gotta go. And runs away.
Yeah.
Extremely
goofy. Oh, it's so good. We then start the next quest called Rearmed. We revisit Round Rocks, who is pondering what should be done with the glowstone the Illuminati seek. It's her favorite, but is also what Mide had been seeking for so long. It has already brought Round Rocks 3 years of joy, so she wants to give it to Mide so she can be happy too. She gives it to us for safekeeping until next time we meet and points us to where Mide might be.
Round Rocks, too noble and kind-hearted to be hanging out with any of us.
They managed to make a noble but good character that I, like, would die for in such a short amount of time, just because they made her so charming.
That's because her character trait isn't being noble, it's being nice.
Yeah, Yeah, and also she's got, you know, like her own interests and passions, and so it's not, she's not just a cipher of niceness. She's got stuff that she likes and wants, but also
it's fucking Guga, is that right?
Yeah, yeah, it's great. I love her. She's so good. Fuck everybody else. Fuck the Scions. Fucking bunch of war criminals. Leave her alone. Get a job.
Yeah, let's just hang out with the Round Rocks and Nero.
Yes! Oh my god. Much better game. Or much, much more of a fun hangout game, at least.
God, can you imagine fucking Nero's thoughts on Pandemonium?
We find Mide where Round Rocks pointed to. We pass on the message and try to hand over the stone, but Mide refuses, knowing how much it means to Round Rocks. She then talks herself into it under the premise of, well, it's safer from the Illuminati with me than with her.
How fucking dare you say that to my face? I am the Warrior of Light, and you are some random quest NPC.
I really thought that Mide was going to be like, no, actually, you should keep it because it will be safest with you.
That's what makes fucking sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead, we have to honor Round Rocks' wishes because she is such a bro. And I'm sitting here like, this spells disaster. This is fucking, what is it? Chekhov's Warrior of Light.
That's right. Because we're stupid, we hand it over to her. She then says, sadly, it's useless to her. When Round Rocks held it, a piece of the Enigma Codex was displayed. Yet it had been handled by countless others, us included, without ever doing so. Apparently, the rock can detect ideological thought crimes and only works for those who share its fundamental libertarian principles. This places Round Rocks in both physical and moral danger. The physical danger stemming from what if the Illuminati finds out. Mide wants to draw them away from the shortstop.
I love the idea of a chosen one narrative where the, like, requirements for being the chosen one are just have the right ideology. It's so funny to me.
Yeah, fucking Andrew Yang only need apply, basically. Mide plans to leave the area and then make it known that she has the fragment that of like just 70 question marks. What are you doing, my guy? She wants us to look after Round Rocks while she's gone. Mide tries once more to activate the codex, but is judged unworthy. Round Rocks rolls up and tells us that there is an emergency at the shortstop.
Round Rocks rolls up and tells us that there is an emergency at the shortstop. We head back, and Wedge says Ishtola reports that Alexander has started sucking ether like crazy, which means the Illuminati are at it again. When the planet drained, but she keeps sucking. They're also stockpiling explosives, but Wedge has a plan, and it's for us to strike first. Biggs is already out scouting on the cliff, overlooking Alexander's hand, and we need to link up with him. Cid arrives with Ishtola in tow. She confirms that Alexander is to blame, and Wedge reveals his new invention, the Electrojammer 3, the first of its kind. Its high-frequency waves will jam their comms, making it impossible for them to coordinate a defense. Real quick, when he presents it, he's like, ta-da! And then Biggs, and only Biggs, starts clapping extremely enthusiastically.
He does the lean back, arms up, there's like the party favors, like,
yeah,
it's so good.
Oh my god.
Wedge activates it and it goes fucking wild and then explodes. If I were to rate this on a scale of 1 to holy, it's a holy. We hear what sounds like a blast, and then Alexander begins to move, raising up its other arm onto the shore and slowly lifting its body, and then we have to look at its dumb glowing red eyes for, like, the next entire time we do this quest.
I hate the googly eyes and the ship hull mouth. It, like, the rest of Alexander looks so, like, it, you know, it's a little bit steampunky, but it looks like grand and magnificent and ornate and gargantuan, and then it just has fucking just like Bodie McBoatface ass face. I hate it so much.
Why does it have a head? Why can it not just be like the Blitzball machine from Final Fantasy X that you fight on the boat? You know what I mean? Doesn't need a head. It would look so much sicker without it.
It is a walking city. It has zero need for a skull None.
Let's get some more spires up in here. No head. Yeah. More towers.
Yeah. Yeah.
More like Final Fantasy IX, Alexander.
Exactly.
Wedge's device appears to have disrupted the barrier around the other arm momentarily, which will confuse the Illuminati inside while they try to wonder what the fuck is happening with this robot, and provides a convenient point of ingress for us, because now we have a different hand to fly to start all of these. Having reminded us she's involved with the plot, Yshtola leaves to tell Midoriya what has happened, and everyone goes with her. Elsewhere, Quick Fix is observing Alexander from a cliff nearby and is pleased another core sprung to life.
And then we get to do the next round of the raid, which is, I guess, technically like the next raid cycle. It starts with Fist of the Sun, which is, I don't know, for whatever reason, it's a funnier name to me than Fist of the Father. And at least these first two are... God. Okay. So I understand what they're going for in theory, which is that the first two dungeons are like a flip or a permutation on the first two dungeons of the Gordius of the Father layer. But they're way too short to do anything interesting with it. So it's just like, it's the exact same layout of the Fist of the Father, but just more vertical because the hand is at more of an angle. So instead of like walking up a ramp with all these pistons and stuff, you get like platform teleported upwards through the level. But like there's nothing there. So instead it just feels like a rehash or a repeat more than like a cool permutation of something. Also,
counterpoint. It is a cool alteration of the last thing, because Alexander has stood up and the angle is much steeper. So now the steam that would have been a navigation hazard is required to even get up the much steeper angle.
If it took longer than 30 seconds, I would agree with you. I'm trying my best.
It is literally nothing, okay?
Yeah, no, I know. It just, the one little neat touch is actually in the boss arena itself, which is that on the far wall of the boss arena, there are a lot of like handwritten notes just like nailed all over the wall. Like, this is actually a workspace and the Illuminati have been in here for a while and are
it's like the inside of the Magi over there.
Yeah. I think that part's neat, but everything else, it was so nothing. So, we arrive at the boss, and it is against a guy named Super Goblin Ratfinks Twinkledinks. And the notes here say, it's the one with Super Goblin Ratfinks Twinkledinks and his million irrelevant mechanics.
Look, at this point in my entire Final Fantasy XIV career, I've literally never, ever, and nothing has happened with this boss. But then also, we wiped four times because no one knew about being a bird.
Oh, goddamn. Yeah. And the bird is very important.
Or the Thunder Tower, which is I actually forgot to write down. Turns out there are a lot of them. If the stat cap for this was like 20% lower, this would still be something you'd have to know everything about.
I think that's true of all of these. Yeah. There are so many mechanics flying around with this. The visual gimmick for it, it's like, it's almost like a riff on Alice in Wonderland, where there are like a weird medical take on Alice in Wonderland, though, because there are four comically large, different neon-colored hypodermic needles around the arena, and the Ratfinks will, like, waddle over to the next hypodermic needle and transform himself to get like really big, and then he does an attack, or really small, or like transform into a different form. And so conceptually I had a lot of fun with that. I thought that was cute. But the actual mechanics are, The tank pulls the boss into a corner. When the boss becomes big, he will apply debuffs to the tank, and then the main tank will be stunned at the fourth debuff, and the off tank needs to provoke to and mitigate so that the tank buster can be survived. This will repeat throughout.
It is worth noting that this and the next, there is almost no normal difficulty content that requires a tank swap. But that is like a regular theme in Alexander, because the Alexander stuff was, at the time, like much more mechanically complicated, and that even like ripples into the normal, where it's some of the only content where you have to do tank swaps still.
Yeah. Are there no tank swaps even in like normal content for Endwalker stuff?
It's a little more common, but not really.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't play tank that much, so I don't know. But yeah, I've never had to tank swap in my tanking adventures. You're totally right.
Yeah.
The last pair of mechanics, when the boss spawns bombs, some players need to run into the red puddle to become a gorilla and knock the bombs into the opposite corner because the area of effect is enormous. And then finally, when the boss becomes huge and starts casting boost, everyone needs to become a bird because he's about to strike the ground multiple times for a multi-hit raid wide, and we need to be flying because it is a ground-based attack, and also each consecutive hit applies a vuln stack, so if you're not a bird, you will just get got immediately.
The tanks didn't know about the tank swap, and a lot of people didn't know about a bird, and only one of the healers knew about mitigating the thunder tower, which is a thing you have to stand in every once in a while so everyone doesn't eat a heavy raid wide, but the same person can't be the person that stands in it twice in a row. So one of our healers would die every once in a while from doing it twice in a row because the other one wasn't doing it.
Oh my god, that's brutal. That's
very funny, actually.
So thankless, being the one healer that knows mechanics sucks.
Afterwards, we emerge from Alexander, and Big says that while on patrol, he and Wedge spied a meeting between Midei and the Illuminati, where she handed over the Codex fragment and entered Alexander with the Illuminati. Big suggests that it may have been coercion, but then Quick Thinks rolls up to call us fucking morons and to tell us that they had an agreement with her from the start, and everyone does the shocked emote, which is very funny when Wedge is here, because the Lalafell shocked emote is so over the top.
Yeah.
Quick Thinks says they now have all the fragments of the Codex. When Midei betrayed our trust, she also betrayed our future. Choice quote from here from Wedge. He says, now, Biggs, if the Grandmaster of the Illuminati said it, it must be true.
I did such a 180 because I don't know, I was playing half asleep or something, because initially I was like, oh my god, Wedge, do not be that dumb. You are not that dumb. Come on, Wedge. And then immediately it was registered that that was obviously sarcasm, and I was just a big idiot for not catching it. Quick Thinks then menaces us some more, and he and his squad roll out. Wedge turns to us and says he would have believed it was betrayal if Quick Thinks hadn't just come to tell us that it was. Backrix lends some credence to Quick Thinks' claims, however. They found records stating that a group of Aura treasure hunters came to the area and 3 years ago went to the ruins by the river and perished in the earthquakes caused by Alexander's failed summoning. Biggs and Wedge have a hard time believing they did the summoning and that Midei was involved, and Backrix did too until he found that the genius technologist who wrote the Enigma Codex 100 years ago was an Aura Zaela with blue hair and features that exactly match Midei. Roundrocks is heartbroken at this because Midei is her friend, and so she refuses to believe it, rushing off alone to find Midei.
That starts our next quest, The Folly of Youth. Big says we shouldn't worry about Roundrocks. Wedge will keep her safe. He's more worried about Midei and thinks we should give her the benefit of the doubt for now. He thinks our concern at the moment should be getting the Codex Fragment back and pushing further into Alexander while the Illuminati are still in disarray from our last attack.
Very cute line from Biggs where he says, hey, if you're going into Alexander, make sure and break something down there for me.
Yeah. And then we head into the Cuff of the Sun, where mechanics are back on the menu, baby.
Yay.
We're excited. We love them.
Yeah.
We love to see them. Also, this is very funny to me as someone who did like brute justice for 3 months, like Savage Mid Eye level. This,
oh my god, yeah,
because you have to deal with basically all of these at once, just all of the mechanics spammed overlaying atop of each other for about an entire minute twice in brute justice. That's what the intermissions are in that fight. It is a nightmare. So this dungeon is two trash packs, but this time fire is coming out of the chute until you kill the second pack, so you can't just jump in there. The first boss is Blaster, and Blaster has two main mechanics. First, Blaster drops mines, which deal a bajillion damage when stepped on. We dealt with these in, like, the Bahamut raids, but I think this is the first use of mines on, like, normal difficulty content. Tanks might have to move the boss to make sure melee can safely do their positionals, depending on where the mines go. And second, Blaster will mark like a bunch of players, I think like 5 or 6, and after a few seconds, copies of Blaster will fall on them, dealing area of effect damage around them. The copies will then turn and face the center of the arena and dash across it, dealing pretty significant damage. The best way to handle this is to have everyone marked line up along the same edge of the arena, spaced out, so that the danger area is bow tie shaped instead of just being fucking everywhere and no one can really tell.
Oh my god, yeah, that would make it impossible. It would be so chaotic because you would have to track the positions.
I was one of the only people who didn't get hit because I knew what this mechanic was.
Oh, incredible.
RIP to the healers, though.
After we beat Blaster, we just like kind of run to the next big platform, and our second little mini boss battle is Brawler. Well, not mini. It is a mini boss. It's not a little. Anyway,
yeah, they both die in like Brawler. A minute and a half. Like, yeah, Mekio Swooshi doesn't come back up in time.
So Brawler is a boss where only the tanks have to deal with the mechanics. It's got 3 attacks, and you gotta look at the hands to figure out what's coming. A single drill means a random player is getting a line area of effect attack targeted at him. A single equipped arm means a laser the tank can live through with mitigations, and a double laser means the tank needs to stack with the group to share the damage. Tank swaps are also required due to stacking magic vulnerability debuffs.
I'm going to tell you that these lasers are a great way you die during, like, the Brute Justice raid, when the tank's just like, whoops, did the wrong one. The whole party ate the tank-only laser.
Oh, god. This is like a version of Shiva Extreme, though, where you have to pay attention to the stance more than you, like, stare at the floor for the mechanics.
Yeah. And only the tank has to care, not everybody. They decided that making everybody pay attention was too much. Thirdly, we have Swindler. Swindler has multiple mechanics, but also this is normal mode, so you're only going to encounter one of them, which is height check. In height check, the square panels of the floor either raise or lower slightly, creating a checkerboard pattern of like staggered heights. And all players get a debuff that make you take more damage from being high or low, and you have like 3 seconds to get to the opposite of your debuff. If you fail, you'll take heavy damage in a Vuln stack right before a nasty raid wide comes out. This is my favorite Savage mechanic because each person who fails causes a 40 HP, 40% health raid wide.
Oh my god.
And the last boss is Vortexer. Vortexer has mechanics, but don't worry about it. It's normal. Don't stand at the AoEs. Don't walk through the lava, but also it's fine if you do. I did it just to see. It's not a lot of damage at all. And don't drop the Shiva ice rings on the party. Ta-da!
I have one little counter to that, which is that after you don't drop the Shiva ice rings on the party, the ice boulder that appears, you should run behind it so that the boulder is between you and Vortexer, because Ultra Flash will instantly kill you, and I did not notice the boulder.
Let me see what this Discord note says. Interesting. It says that it's Ryan Beatty's fault if you fail a DPS check, so I don't think anyone not playing with you has to worry about not killing the boss before then.
Oh my god.
I've literally never seen this happen ever. I've never seen the flash attack come up.
And it happened to me. And yeah, seriously owned. I got revived, at least. I was half expecting them to just leave me there because we swiftly beat it after the Ultra Flash. So after we leave, Midei is just like back at the shortstop, like nothing happened. She asks about Round Rock's whereabouts, and when we tell her what happened, she confesses that some of it is true. She did actually meet with the Illuminati. She explains, though, her motivation for giving them the fragment, and then says she also just gave them a plain old rock. She still has the true Codex fragment. She swindled them. Biggs gives a very toothy grin and says he knew Quick Things was full of it. Midei bursts his bubble, though. What Quick Things said was true. She even taught them how to summon Alexander so she could take advantage of them, much like we wanted to.
Now it's fucking plot o'clock. Get ready. Strap in. Cutscene time. And Midei tells us the author of the Enigma Codex was one of her ancestors. By the way, cannot wait until we see the actual Enigma Codex. It looks goofy.
Uh-huh.
The creation of the perfect world described in the Codex had long been a goal of members of her tribe. They acted together in secret to try to realize its high ideals, free of the intellectual elitism that has infected the Illuminati. In that time, their group had a leader who thought they were close to their goals, and she fell in love with him. Wish he had a name so I could write it here instead of everything else.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted nothing more than to see his dreams realized. She simped so hard that she agreed to help him summon a primal without giving it a thought.
God.
That is it!
Yeah, no, it is, and it's really...
Sucker,
it's
idolizing really... mediocre philosophy.
It's really interesting... Because Final Fantasy XIV has a few plot types that they just go back to like a well over and over again when they have significant side quests to write out. And one of them is the mysterious stranger with unclear motivations that gets a little too wrapped up in their desires and then has regrets over it. And like, because Round Rocks notices Midei always touches her scar or remembering her old love, like, it's very much that, and it turns out that Midei's, like, mysterious motivation was that she was just really, really, really in love with a debate club nerd, and I'm yelling out here, like, all right, I get it, but, like, get your own dream, girl. Have some self-actualization. Do shit that you want to do. And what's nice, this one is well written, as goofy as it is, because we meet her when she's already in regret mode, and she's still doing shit that we don't quite understand, but it does not, as funny as I find this, it does not feel as tired as other permutations of this kind of, like, basic plot structure.
Yeah.
It's not... like the best.
They make an entire expansion out of sad guys with regret later. That's just what Endwalker is. Everyone is
100%. Yeah. That's
gotta they... end walk down to the store for my Wellbutrin.
Three years ago, however, Midei learned that summoning the primal to like will the Enigma Codex into existence was a completely fucking stupid idea, because in the process, her love was dragged into Alexander's core and her remaining companions were killed.
And this is where we see the Codex, a giant black, untextured, like, back computer tech demo style, like, conal pyramid. It is so stupid. It looks like when you see it, you're like, is this a visual bug? It's just like untextured geometry.
Yeah. What if Star Fox 1 in Ultra HD just for like one asset? It's goofy. It's so goofy. Yeah.
This is what 90s like 3D graphics card demos were full of. Look how smooth our code is.
In a last-ditch effort to fix what they had done, Mide summoned the barrier, sealing Alexander, but at that moment, the codex shattered and Alexander disappeared without a trace.
Why'd you do this, Mide?
Yeah. Huh? Why? We see Round Rocks take a piece as Mide is on her knees, overcome by her loss and failure, surrounded by the codex fragments. Mide says they were fools to only think of the future, missing out on the paradise being created when the precious time she spent working with her friends and love on a shared goal was the real precious moment.
The point of organizing is the friends you make along the way, not the systemic change you create. Shut the fuck up, loser.
I mean, yeah, she is, though, you know, the DSA needs people like her who are just there to simp and like grow the numbers. And maybe she'll develop ideology on the way, but
probably not.
Probably not.
Big says that's sad and all, but it doesn't explain why she helped the Illuminati summon the primal or help us get into it. And Mide tells him she did it simply so she could see her love again and maybe walk to the ends of the world with him in their giant death robot. She believes her love soul still resides within Alexander. And then we got like one of the other goblins, what's his name? Backrick starts doing like annoying atheist stuff at her, and Big's like, "Will you shut the fuck up, bro?" Uh-huh. Biggs asks her what happens when all the codex fragments are united, and she says that it could be used to control Alexander. As long as the complete Enigma codex and someone capable of reading it are present, Alexander can be commanded to transport those inside it wherever they choose. Mide was once able to read the codex, but now the stones are dead to her. However, Round Rocks can read the codex. It's at this moment that Wedge runs up and tells us that Round Rocks has been captured, and we're all blown away that Wedge was not capable of physically defending her.
Poor Wedge. He keeps trying to, like, be the great protector for the little guy because he also has that big crush on Totoro, which is cute, and he just can't do it. Like, just stick to your machines, bud. I'm sorry.
I'm gonna have to correct you here. It is not a big crush. It is a crush.
Okay. All right. All right. Fair.
On account of him being small. Got him. Got him. Him and his dumbass onion head.
Fucking get owned, Wedge.
And that's it for now. We're going to leave off on this cliffhanger because I am pretty sure the next part is where it starts getting extremely long.
Yeah. I did the next dungeon and it's like a reasonable amount of plot, but then it just blows the fuck up. I elaborated on most of my general thoughts throughout the episode, but one thing I do want to say is that I still love Quick Thinks as cat, and the fact that that cat exists and is cute makes me want to trust Quick Thinks more than I should. And that's it.
I feel like we gave an entire backstory of Quick Thinks where he thought, I think everyone should have work-related injuries, and I think that's enough to not trust anything that Quick Thinks has to say.
Oh, for sure. He is the only person in Final Fantasy XIV who is a worse boss than Cid Garland.
Not true, a Manelaine is a worse boss than Cid.
Yeah. You know, yeah, he is. God, a Manelaine sucks.
Everyone is afraid of her. All the people we talk to that works for her are like afraid that she will beat the shit out of them.
Yeah, but then Wedge himself is like, I wonder who is a worse boss between her and Cid. Probably Cid, but I wouldn't want to test that out.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you think about the story of these raids? Or the raids?
Yeah, I thought that it was a very well told and presented and charmingly written version of a story that isn't that unique or interesting in itself, but I like the flavor of it quite a bit right now. It is not wearing out its welcome. Round Rocks is a G. It's nice.
I'm a little annoyed because at this point, I want anything to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We're like six into this and nothing has really happened. Everything is looking backwards the whole time. It's like a fundamental problem with the raid series in general. They're all like this, where yeah. there's like 4 to 6 raids that have varying amounts of backstory. When you're the FF12 raid, the amount is too much.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the Void Arc, to be honest. It's not just the Ibelisse raid.
Yeah.
And it takes a really long time for literally anything to happen.
I definitely agree with that. And it's also a little bit galling to think about how this was stretched over several months. Like, the first section, the Gordius section, was all available, and then the next section wasn't available, I think, until the next patch cycle, or the next numbered patch, rather. And, like, getting that much nothing and then having to grind that for several months doesn't seem good at all.
No. Also, I'm gonna mail a bomb to Square Enix, because it is unacceptable to me that you have raid trash items and then the next three have different trash items, and there's like 12 of them. And
yeah,
there's 40 different trash items for this raid series, because this is before they invented what if it was tombstones that, after this was no longer current, became regular tombstones instead.
Yeah. And the gear that you get by synthesizing and trading in these trash items doesn't even look good and is definitely below the eye level that you already are at because of your tombstone gear.
You look like an Arcade Fire listener.
Yeah. Fucking owned.
Peace out, fuckers.
Bye.